Burton lay on his back on a pile of tree leaves and puffed on a cigar. It was excellent, and in the London of his day would have cost at least a shilling. He didn't feel so minute and unworthy now. The stars were inanimate matter, and he was alive. No star could ever know the delicious taste of an expensive cigar. Nor could it know the ecstasy of holding a warm, well-curved woman next to it. On the other side of the fire, half or wholly lost in the grasses and the shadows, were the Triestans. The liquor had uninhibited them, though part of their sense of freedom may have come from joy at being alive and young again. They giggled and laughed and rolled back and forth in the grass and made loud noises while kissing. And then, couple by couple, they retreated into the darkness, or at least made no more loud noises. The little girl had fallen asleep by Alice. The firelight flickered over Alice's handsome, aristocratic face and bald head and on the magnificent body and long legs. Burton suddenly knew that all of him had been resurrected. He definitely wasn't the old man who, during the last 16 years of his life, had paid so heavily for the many fevers and sicknesses that had squeezed him dry in the tropics. Now he was young again, healthy, and possessed by the old, clamoring demon. Yet he had given his promise to protect her. He could make no move, say no word which she could interpret as seductive. Well, she wasn't the only woman in the world. As a matter of fact, he had the whole world of women, if not at his disposal, at least available to be asked. That is, he did, if everybody who had died on Earth was on this planet. She would be only one among many billions, and possibly 36 billion if Frigate's estimate was correct. But there was, of course, no such evidence that this was the case. The hell of it was that Alice might as well be the only one in the world at this moment, anyway. He couldn't get up and walk off into the darkness looking for another woman, because that would leave her and the child unprotected. She certainly wouldn't feel safe with Monat and Kaz, nor could he blame her. They were so terrifyingly ugly. Nor could he entrust her to Frigate, if Frigate returned tonight, which Burton doubted, because the fellow was an unknown quantity. Burton suddenly laughed loudly at his situation. He had decided that he might as well stick it out for tonight. This thought set him laughing again, and he didn't stop until Alice asked him if he was all right. "More right than you will ever know," he said, turning his back to her. He reached into his grail and extracted the last item. This was a small, flat stick of chicle-like substance. Frigate, before leaving, had remarked that their unknown benefactors must be American, otherwise they wouldn't have thought of providing chewing gum. After stubbing out his cigar on the ground, Burton popped the stick into his mouth. He said, "This has a strange but rather delicious taste. Have you tried yours?" "I am tempted, but I imagine I'd look like a cow chewing her cud."
"Forget about being a lady," Burton said. "Do you think that beings with the power to resurrect you would have vulgar tastes?"
Alice smiled slightly and said, "I really wouldn't know," and placed the stick in her mouth. For a moment they chewed idly, looking across the fire at each other. She was unable to look him full in the eyes for more than a few seconds at a time. Burton said, "Frigate mentioned that he knew you, of you, rather. Just who are you, if you will pardon my unseemly curiosity?"
"There are no secrets among the dead," she replied lightly, "or among the ex-dead, either."
She had been born Alice Pleasance Little on April 25, 1852. Burton was 30 then. She was the direct descendant of King Edward III and his son John of Gaunt. Her father was Dean of Christ Church College of Oxford and co-author of a famous Greek-English lexicon. Little and Scott, Burton thought. She had had a happy childhood, an excellent education, and had met many famous people of her times. Gladstone, Matthew Arnold, the Prince of Wales, who was placed under her father's care while he was at Oxford. Her husband had been Reginald Jervis Hargreaves, and she had loved him very much. He had been a country gentleman, liked to hunt, fish, play cricket, raise trees, and read French literature. She had 3 sons, all captains, 2 of whom died in the Great War of 1914-1918. This was the second time that day that Burton had heard of the Great War.
She talked on and on as if drink had loosened her tongue, or as if she wanted to place a barrier of conversation between her and Burton. She talked of Dinah, the tabby kitten she had loved when she was a child, the great trees of her husband's arboretum, how her father, when working on his lexicon, would always sneeze at 12 o'clock in the afternoon, no one knew why. At the age of 80, she was given an honorary Doctor of Letters by the American University, Columbia, because of the vital part she had played in the genesis of Mr. Dodgson's famous book. She neglected to mention the title, and Burton, though a voracious reader, did not recall any works by a Mr. Dodgson.